Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. My name's Mark.
And I'm Yucca.
And today we're going to talk about the August Sabbath, the midpoint between the summer solstice and the autumnal equinox, which is celebrated by many pagans as one of the eight stations on the wheel of the year.
Mm-hmm. It's also one of those tricky ones in terms of what is it called?
Right. That's the first thing we need to talk about. What do you call this thing? How do you pronounce that? And so forth and so on from there.
Yeah. Well, I often use Lammas because it's the one I can spell, of the ones that other people might know what I'm talking about. I also think of it as second summer. Mm-hmm. And it's just that beautiful, wonderful holiday, which we'll get into the meaning for it later, but I almost don't even think of it having a name. I just associate it with what's happening during the season for us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's our monsoon holiday.
Right. Right. Yeah. Lammas comes from the Middle English, meaning loaf mass. Mm-hmm. So in Europe, it's very associated with bread and the grain harvest, which happened right about now in the course of the year in the countries that had that kind of agricultural cycle. Mm-hmm. And so it's also associated with all of the products of grain, like beer and bread and, you know, all the associated things that you can make with grain. Mm-hmm. Another word that is commonly used in the pagan community is lunasa, which is spelled with a variety of extra consonants.
It's pronounced lunasa, lunasa, neither of which are correct pronunciations for Irish.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I choose not to use that name because when I was naming the Sabbaths around the course of the Wheel of the Year, and just generally conceptualizing Atheopaganism generally, I didn't want to be drawing from any particular culture.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be very clear that this was a modern interpretation of paganism that didn't stem from Celtic culture or Norse culture or Germanic culture or Greek culture or Egyptian culture. You know, for a number of reasons, one of which is that I feel strongly about my spirituality being a forward-looking spirituality, mm-hmm. about living in the world today and our vision for the future. And also because I wanted to avoid cultural appropriation.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, that specific name also is in reference to a god, is it not?
Yes. Yes, Lug, who is a god that I don't know anything about.
Yeah.
So what I have been calling this, I for a while, and in the book, I call it Summer's End.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it just isn't the end of summer here. That doesn't work very well. So I've moved from that to Summer's Waning, and also just to the term dimming. Because this is the time of year when it begins to become clear that the days are getting shorter again.
Yes.
It's been long enough since the summer solstice that you can really tell you're not getting those very late nights anymore. Mm-hmm. The days are still long. They're just not as long.
Yeah. It's getting noticeable. Mm. I love the waning that connects it back to some of the lunar terminology that we use as well. Even mm-hmm. though it's a solar holiday, it's connecting those two just with the language.
Right, right.
Although in my climate, the days are getting shorter, but the summer itself definitely not coming to an end. This is the height of summer for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, summer solstice is still... I mean, it's summer, but it's still springish. It's really the end of spring, but this is truly summer for us at this point.
Would you say it was high summer where you are?
Really sure how to what that word would really mean to be high summer, right?
Okay.
Because I would associate high summer with being like the very middle of summer. And I suppose it is, but the way seasons transition is not nice and smooth the way that it looks in the picture books.
Right.
It's just, for us often, it's okay, boom. Right. Season is changed, weather is changed, it's all different. Or it just kind of like slogs along, just like, okay, not making up its mind which season it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Where I am in California, we have the buffering effect of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And that tends to sort of smooth things out. I've lived in places and been places where the changing of the season is like the slamming of a door.
Yeah. And
you have these relatively warm but kind of autumnally wan days in October, and then bang, and it snows, and it's winter time, and it stays winter time for months.
Yeah.
So it really just depends on where you are. And as we've so often said, paganism is at its heart, at least we think, a spirituality of place.
Mm-hmm.
It's about being aware of where we are in the course of the year and where we are on the planet and in the cosmos, and paying attention to that and incorporating that into what we celebrate spiritually.
Mm.
So what we're describing in terms of what we practice and what we choose to do and so forth, you know, can all be thrown out the window if that's not what is going on where you live.
Yeah.
You know, the paganism of where you live should be the spirituality of that place.
Yeah. I suspect someone listening from Samoa is going to be in a completely different situation than either of us.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, before we go too much further in, Mark, there was a poem that you wanted to share.
Oh, yes. I completely forgot that, and now I'm remembering. So I have a cycle of 8 poems about the wheel of the year, and this is the one for this season, which is called Gifts of a Problem Sabbath, which is for dimming or summer's waning. Hidden, you spring upon us from the calendar. Ah, the marble-mouthed holiday is upon us again. What shall we call it? Lammas or Lunasa? How on earth do you pronounce that? But worse, what does it mean? Behold the midpoint, the blazing furnace of August. Ritual? Indoors, perhaps, but not under that sun. Rather, let us go to the places of water to bask, to where berries hang heavy among the thorns, knowing it all starts now, the cascade of food pouring from the good earth. Break a stalk of barley, saying, this is my heritage, this is emmer wheat, is einkorn, is the tough grass of the fertile crescent, bread to bake my loaves. And bake one then, a crusty, yeasty rosemary dome for tearing with the hands. Eat warm with butter or oil. Feel the life milling in your teeth and swallow. The good earth sprung abundant from the collision of earth's magic, time and art and science. We are a making people, our hose and lore, midwife the coming of apples and squash, peppers, tomatoes. The great gathering begins now.
It's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is traditionally the time of the first harvest. And where I am, we've been having stone fruit and garden vegetables and so forth kind of pouring out for a period of months now.
Mm-hmm.
But in many places where it's colder and further to the north and the angle of the sun is not quite as strong on the leaves, right about now is when you start being able to get some food other than like butchered lambs and eggs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of an exciting time, but it's also a time that's really associated with work.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about the summer solstice as conceptualized, as I see it, as kind of a holiday of leisure.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the all the plants are in the ground and all the work to foster them has happened. And other than keeping critters from eating it, you just basically have to wait until it's ready to harvest. Well, now it's time. And so I associate this holiday also with work and vocation, mm-hmm. and also with technology, with tools, because, you know, there's a real charming quality to the aesthetic that's associated with modern paganism, the sort of medieval Europe, Renaissance, medieval Europe kind of aesthetic. But if you root all of your framing in that, you miss out on the many benefits of modernity. And technology is amazing. It's done incredible things for us. It has caused our quality of life nearly universally throughout the world to rise, at least to some degree.
Mm-hmm. Not equally, but...
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. But still... It has enabled us to create a great deal more food than we were able to otherwise, and to communicate over vast distances, and to explore space, and to process information in such rapid, incredible ways, and to develop medical technology to expand our lifespans and
go to the bottom of the ocean and all kinds of things. Yeah.
Right. All kinds of things.
Do this. We pointed out a lot, but just how amazing this is. So as we record, we're looking at each other's faces from, we should actually figure out how many miles apart we are, but
we should
pretty far. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty far.
Recording this and then putting it on the internet. And then you, the listener, are downloading it, and you might be listening to it in your car, your pocket, or wherever it is that you are. Just so boggling, right?
Mm-hmm. My partner, Nemea, was saying this morning, the 21st century is amazing. We're old enough to remember when the 21st century was really going to be the future. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know,
flying cars and
2001, A Space Odyssey and all that kind of stuff. So it didn't quite work out that way, but there's still a lot that's really remarkable about where we have arrived as humanity. And so I think about technology at this time and technological advance. And, you know, I do stuff like defragment my hard drive and, you know, make sure that everything is, you know, backed up to the cloud and just some sort of maintenance things that this gives me a point in the calendar to focus on.
Mm. Yeah. Just good to have those scheduled in there, or else they just don't happen until your hard drive crashes and then you're panicking.
And then you're crying and you're sending your hard drive off to Texas to have the data pulled off it and by some very expensive service, which I had to do once and it was no fun.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I love that take that you have bringing a recognition and celebration in to our practices on things that aren't thought of as traditionally pagan and yet are so important to our lives. And when our paganism is about our lives and our experience with the world, it's really important to include all of it, not just the pretty romantic stuff, but, you know, the whole picture, that whole cycle.
Exactly so. Exactly so. And we can do that while not glossing over the many negative impacts that the advance of technology have caused. You know, we can certainly, I mean, it's not exactly the time of year for grieving, but we can certainly, you know, mark those impacts in our recognition. But that doesn't mean that we should ignore those accomplishments. Mm-hmm. You know, very much like this was the traditional time of the Olympic Games in ancient Greece. And so many people associate athletic contests and sort of feats of athleticism with this holiday as well. And there's sort of a modern equivalent to that, because this is the time when people go to the beach and play volleyball and there's a lot of sort of outdoor recreation happening.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the sorts of achievements that we can most celebrate in this time are much more cerebral achievements than they are athletic achievements. I mean, athletes do amazing things, and that's wonderful. And records continue to be broken over and over for how fast people can be and how strong people can be and all that kind of stuff. But the transformative nature of some of these technologies can't be underspoken.
Mm-hmm.
They simply have been game changers for humanity. And it's important for us to, you know, raise a glass to our scientists and engineers who have brought these things to us.
Yeah, definitely.
So how are you planning on celebrating this season, your monsoon season?
Well, first of all, this is the first real monsoon we've had in probably near a decade.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm in the Southwest. I'm in northern New Mexico, high desert. That's 7,000 feet. Not sure what that is in meters. I can look that up. But we're in a very dry, somewhat extreme environment. And this is the time of year that we get rain. And the whole region, I think pretty much the whole half of the continent has been experiencing drought recently.
Mm-hmm.
But we've gotten some rain, and traditionally what happened, we'll be dry all year, dry, dry, dry. We might get a little bit of moisture, snow, storms in the winter, need that for the mountains to get that snowpack in there. But then months of dry, and then the monsoons come, and there's storms that come in the afternoons. The mornings are clear and cool, and then well, it'll start to creep up, get hot, and then the monsoons come and they rain down. And this is the only time of year that things are green. And they haven't been green in years. So it's amazing right now. I'm looking out the window and there's new grass. There's grass seedlings. Grass has sprouted up in just the past few weeks. Now, most of that grass is not going to make it. Unfortunately, we can, you know, as land managers, do what we can to try and, you know, put a little bit of mulch down and try and imitate the biology that was lost that this land needs. But this is the time of, this is the time of the grass, the grasslands, the ranges just blooming back, popping up. So we see this as our monsoon season, but it's the celebration of the grasslands. Mm-hmm. Because our approach for the Wheel of the Year is, well, there's what's going on in terms of the Earth's position with the sun and the temperatures and all of that. But we also associate each season with some part of the biosphere that humans are intimately connected with and dependent upon. So Yule, or winter solstice, is the time that we celebrate the forests. But this is the time of year that we celebrate the grasslands, the brittle environments. So a brittle environment is one like this, where you might get moisture, but it's not uniformly distributed throughout the year. And so different types of life have to exist in systems like this. Our recovery processes are different than non-brittle environments that get regular moisture. Whether it's a lot or a little, they get regular. So they mm-hmm. can have very different decomposition processes than us. So we celebrate that grass. And for me, it's very special, as my first degree was in range ecology and management and working in restoration. So that's something that's just an eye that I have for anyways. I just love it and I'm fascinated by it and work in it. But it's the celebration of the grasses. So we're doing lots of playing outside, mostly in the mornings and the evenings, because the middle of the day is rough. When the storms are coming, running out and playing in the storms. And we get it so seldomly that it's like, oh, kids, go get muddy, get as muddy as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And as the adults, we will be cheering with some beer, which we aren't big drinkers. We might have maybe a bottle or two a month of either beer or cider. But it's a celebration of the grasses. And that's, you know, that's where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's wonderful. Going on our side. Yeah.
Great. That's great. I honestly don't know what I'm going to be doing this year. Sometimes I have invited people out to the coast mm-hmm. because we're like 25 miles from the Pacific Ocean, maybe 30. And the Pacific Ocean is pretty impressive. I mean, I've been living relatively near it all my life, but that's an awful lot of water. And it's very fierce. It's misnamed. The Pacific Ocean is definitely misnamed. The Atlantic coast doesn't get nearly the kind of ferocity in terms of waves and so forth that the Pacific coast does. Mm-hmm. But this time of year, it's a nice time to go to the beach and barbecue something and play around and just be outside. Because we've been moving and because of all the tumult that's been happening in my life right now, I haven't been able to put anything like that together yet, but I'm still considering putting out feelers to some friends and seeing if they'd like to go out to the coast for a little gathering and ritual next Saturday or Sunday. Mm-hmm. So that would be, and I should say that the actual midpoint between the solstice and the equinox is around the 7th of August. So you've got a while in there to find a time that works for you and do something that feels appropriate to the season. Obviously, in a modern context, weekends tend to work out better for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So that's what I tend to focus on. But yeah, so that's the sort of thing that I'm thinking. And also on the Atheopaganism Zoom mixer that we do on Saturday mornings, we're doing a ritual as well on Zoom.
Nice.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I had something else also that I wanted to read that I had forgotten about, but now I remember.
Oh, okay.
Which is that this is also the point in the season that the earliest of the grape harvests tend to happen. And it may not be, that may not be true this year because we've had so little in the way of water mm-hmm. that everything is behind,
mm-hmm.
but
an intense heat in yes, your area as well.
Super
right?
Intense yeah. heat. Yes. We've had a lot of raisining and I mean, last year, pretty much everybody's crop was lost because of smoke taint, mm-hmm. because of the smoke from the wildfires. Now, this year, the question is there going to be anything that isn't turned into raisins to harvest?
Hmm.
So pretty rough on the grape industry right now. But anyway, because the traditional song, John Barleycorn Must Die, is associated with this holiday, mm-hmm. and it's also frequently the time when the harvest of the grapes, which we call the crush, mm-hmm. happens around here. I rewrote John Barleycorn Must Die as Joan Zinfandel Must Die. The Zinfandel is a variety of grapes
mm-hmm.
that's grown around here quite a lot. It's a rich red wine and it's very delicious. So I will read this redone version of John Barleycorn Must Die called Joan Zinfandel Must Die. There were three men of the West County, their fortunes for to try, and these three men swore upon an oaken tree, Joan Zinfandel must die. They've planted, trellised, and shorn her limbs, and left her bare abed, and these three men swore a solemn vow, Joan Zinfandel was dead. They let her lie for a very long time, till the rains from heaven did fall, and little Dame Joan sprouted out bright buds, and so amazed them all. They've let her stand till harvest day, till her arms were green as grass, and little Dame Joan's borne some full round fruit, a fulsome ripened lass. They've hired men with their knives so sharp to cut her fruit from her arms. They threw her into a wagon then, and rolled her into the barn. They brought her to the crushing floor, where they crushed her to a mash, squeezed her blood into fermenters, and added yeast, a dash. They racked her to a barrel of oak, where dark and coolness dwell, and there they made a solemn oath on poor Joan Zinfandel. They've hired men to load her high with mighty lifts of fork, and the bottler, he has served her worse than that, for he's bound her behind a cork. And little Dame Joan in the crystal cup, and she's brandy in the glass. And little Dame Joan in the crystal cup proved the bravest lass at last. The good folk, they can't cook nor serve nor live this life so well. And the merchant, he can't seal deal nor debt without a little Zinfandel.
That's great.
Thanks.
I love your reference to the fork lifts in there too.
Yeah, the lift, the mighty lifts of fork.
Yeah. There's something just charming about taking the kind of old-timey language and tunes and applying it to the modern world.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah. So, as always, we hope you really enjoy this holiday, that you take time to celebrate this moment in the year and look around and see what's happening in your local environment and with your local agricultural and biotic cycles. And as always, seek happiness, seek joy, because this is all too short, and we need to celebrate it as we go.
Yes.
Well, thank you for this, Yucca. It's been really a great time to have a conversation.
Likewise, Mark.